This is Peace Talks, the radio series on peacemaking and nonviolent solutions to conflict. Today, the Peace Corps, begun 45 years ago when U.S. President John F. Kennedy signed an executive order establishing the agency to promote world peace and friendship.
I hope this spirit will grow, that hundreds of others of young Americans and older Americans will go overseas to show our best side, to show how much we desire to live at peace. There can be no greater service to our country and no source of pride more real than to be a member of the Peace Corps of the United States.
On this program, we'll hear what the Peace Corps experience was like from a panel of returned Peace Corps volunteers and what it's like today from a Peace Corps volunteer working now in Africa. And we'll talk with Peace Corps Director Gaddy Vasquez about the role of the Peace Corps in the current global climate. The Peace Corps, today on Peace Talks.
I have today signed an executive order providing for the establishment of a Peace Corps. This corps will be a pool of trained men and women sent overseas by the United States government to help foreign countries meet their urgent needs for skilled manpower.
With those words in 1961, President John F. Kennedy set in motion a program that over 45 years has sent 185,000 Americans to all corners of the world on a mission to help over 135 countries with survival and sustainability needs and to promote a better understanding of Americans. I'm Paul Ingalls. Today on Peace Talks, our host Carol Boss will talk with guests who can offer insight into how the Peace Corps' mission has been carried out and the role the organization plays in today's world.
I'm Carol Boss, and I'm happy to be joined in the studio by five returned Peace Corps volunteers who we'll introduce in a moment. Later in the program, we'll be talking with a current Peace Corps volunteer who's working in Africa. We'll also be speaking for a few minutes with a current Peace Corps director, Gaddy Vasquez. And right now, I'm happy to have a studio full of former Peace Corps volunteers. Lauren Kohler is a graduate student at the University of New Mexico, earning both a law degree and a master's through Latin American studies. Joseph Garcia is in graduate school as well at the university and is the Peace Corps recruiter there. In fact, he's the first Latino recruiter for the Peace Corps at UNM. Arne Vandenberg is a teacher of history at Sandia Prep in Albuquerque, and Jan Vandenberg, his wife, is in admissions at the same school. And Dave Davenport from Santa Fe teaches law in Southeast Asia. You know, we actually have two different generations of Peace Corps volunteers here. David, Arne, and Jan were volunteers in the late 60s, just a few years after the Peace Corps was established. And Joseph and Lauren are more recent volunteers. And I'd be interested in hearing, what drew you to the Peace Corps? What was the world like? Not only the world at large, but your own personal world as well. Dave?
Yeah, I was in Peace Corps Thailand from 1967 to 1971. And those were war years. The Vietnam War was going on. And I knew that I didn't want to go into the Army if I could avoid it. I was graduating from college, and I didn't have any career goals at all. I didn't know what I was going to do, or I simply knew that I wanted to do something, something positive, and I wanted to travel. And the Peace Corps had at that time a kind of a training program that extended over two summers. It was an experimental thing that they didn't really continue to use, but it was over the summer after my junior year and the summer after my senior year at college. I had intensive language training and training as a teacher. And so when I went to Thailand, eventually I got to Thailand in late August of 1967. I'd had probably 6 months of language training, and I was very well prepared and felt immediately comfortable in the country. I mean, always there were odd and wonderful things that came up, but I at least had a good language basis to help me out.
What about you, Lauren? What was your experience? And Lauren is our most recent volunteer. She served in Panama.
I was a volunteer from 2002 through 2005.
So how did you get yourself into the Peace Corps?
Well, I think as we mentioned before, something that hasn't changed much is that a lot of students that are getting out of college are still not clear on their career goals, and I definitely was one of them. I had studied environmental science as an undergraduate. And I also had a lot of interest in it because my uncle was a Peace Corps volunteer in Costa Rica in the 70s. So I had heard a lot of secondhand stories about Peace Corps and what it meant to him. So that definitely sparked my interest. And like many others, I wasn't sure of any sort of career path after that. And that's something that I actually gained from my experience, was finding a purpose for my life.
And Oren?
It's a lot of similarities, I think. Maybe one difference. I grew up in a church that was very active early on in the world of development, Church of the Brethren. Really, as a little kid, I think I got intrigued with the idea of other cultures and other countries. And then when Kennedy made his speech, definitely it to me said, you know, here is a point. This is something I've got to be involved in. I was in college at the time. But my brother preceded me, so it was a guarantee because he went to Nigeria a couple years before I did. So really in the very formative years of Peace Corps. So it was sort of a natural.
And Joseph, you grew up in rural South Texas. What inspired you to join the Peace Corps?
Well, I have to say my parents are the ones that inspired me based on their civil rights work in the 70s and 80s. My father was a Vietnam veteran. He was in Vietnam in 68 during the Tet Offensive and saw a lot of combat. He came back to the States, and instead of having a negative effect on him, that it kind of did in terms of different areas, but he started organizing in South Texas for voting rights, for people to be able to register to vote, people to vote safely in South Texas. And in 1985, defeated a discriminatory election system in federal courts, implementing the Voting Rights Act of 1965 that was extended in 75. And through that experience, my brother and I were involved with our parents organizing, which kind of just trained me in terms of becoming a Peace Corps volunteer and taking on that kind of work.
And you had experience, I know you had told me earlier, in construction and farming. Did that turn out to be valuable for you in terms of entering the Peace Corps?
Certainly. Growing up in South Texas wasn't very much different from growing up from serving in rural Paraguay. I grew up in a homogenous Mexican community where life revolved around the Catholic Church. I went to Paraguay, where it was the same situation, a homogenous mestizo culture similar to the one I grew up in that revolved around the Catholic Church.
Do you think the training the Peace Corps provided prepared you adequately, or was it like stepping into the unknown? Jan?
It was very much stepping into the unknown. Actually, I was in an interesting time in Peace Corps because I was in the first in-country training group. So before that point in 1968, in fact, even Arne's group, they trained in the U.S. and then went to the country. We shipped out of Philadelphia. We actually went to Philadelphia for dental appointments and that sort of thing, and then got on a plane and went to Ghana, not knowing really anything about Ghana. And then we spent the next 3 months training in Ghana. The training itself was perhaps a better one than previously perhaps had been given, although Dave's experience sounds interesting with the 2 summers of language training, because although we had language training and it was an intensive language training, and then we would go out in the markets and use it and into the towns and use it, it was much briefer, I think, than yours.
Dave Davenport?
Yeah, I felt my training was really excellent. We had there were a number of people from Thailand, Thai teachers, who were had come over, brought over by the Peace Corps, and we trained in DeKalb, Illinois, the home of Northern Illinois University, and for 2 summers. And I did have that experience of flying over. We left Chicago, and you know, a couple of days later, we were landing in Bangkok. And I was one of the better language people in our group, so I'd been selected by the Thai teachers to give a speech in Thai as we arrived. And so while we were all enthusiastic, as soon as the plane doors opened, all of my friends said, "Dave, you go first." And so they sort of pushed me out, and I came down the steps of the plane, and there was a Thai monk at the bottom of the stairs, and this guy dressed in with a shaved head, dressed in orange robes. And during training, we'd been told that one way to address a monk is to get down on the ground and bow very low three times. And this was the first issue I had, just steps off the plane. What do I do? Do I get down on the tarmac of this airport and bow to this guy? I didn't know how to do it. So I decided not to do that. I just I gave him a polite why. It's a greeting where you put your two hands together and bow a little bit. And I did it in a very polite and formal way. And the monk was pleasant. And the training was great, but there were every step you took, there were new things that came at you every day. And you had to sort of make decisions about how do I do this, how do I do that. People weren't going to tell you. Nobody wanted to embarrass you by pushing you into things that or by pointing out that you didn't know something. So you had to be pretty sensitive to people around you, and you had to learn to read people in a way that I think is terribly important, very useful, and a lot of fun.
What about challenging adjustments, whether to the culture, the society, or even the environment? Anybody have any examples you can share with us?
It's the first time I was ever called a gringo.
This is Joseph.
which really set me back, because I grew up in South Texas calling other people gringo. And it kind of floored me in terms of realizing my own position in this world and position of privilege.
Lauren?
I think also many people before entering Peace Corps think of the physical challenges or other things such as living without electricity or plumbing, you know, hot water, refrigeration. But actually, and I think many of you might agree with me, that those were some of the easiest things to adjust to, the physical adjustments. And some of the more challenging issues were really more sociologically based, as Joseph has said, you know, what your identity is, where you fit into the context of this culture, and how to work effectively within that culture and embrace new ideologies and new ways of thinking about things. I mean, I think that's something that even though you're provided tools and training, you continue to learn until the very last day that you're there in that country.
This is Peace Talks, the series on peacemaking and nonviolent conflict resolution. I'm Carol Boss, and we're talking with returned Peace Corps volunteers. More after this break.
A 1970s Peace Corps TV spot.
Peace Corps is an individual experience. The success of Peace Corps lies in just the volunteer himself. And it's up to you to decide what you want to do and what you're looking for in your experience. For me, it's broadened my scope of seeing things. So I recommend it to anybody.
It may not be the easiest 2 years of your life, but it could be the most rewarding. Call toll-free 800-424-8580. Peace Corps, the toughest job you'll ever love.
This is Peace Talks. I'm Carol Boss, and we're talking with returned Peace Corps volunteers Lauren Kohler, Joseph Garcia, Arne Vanderberg, Jan Vanderberg, and Dave Davenport. Later in the program, we'll be talking with a current Peace Corps volunteer who's working in Africa, and we'll also be speaking with Peace Corps Director Gadi Vasquez. Let me ask you, how does the Peace Corps create peace?
I think that Peace Corps may possibly be through our reputation and the work we've done over these 45 years. Could possibly be the salvation of U.S. foreign policy, in my opinion.
Do you want to talk about that some more and tell us what you mean by that?
From my study, experience, and research, I've realized that what's going on in the world with the United States in regards to our foreign policy is that a situation has developed where a lot of people with very little international experience are at the forefront of U.S. foreign policy. They aren't educated in the history, the culture, the language of these countries, cultures, and thus Peace Corps is enveloped or is characteristic of the lack of understanding, lack of education that is needed.
Lauren.
To add on that, I was actually in my rural community in Panama when an old man, a very weathered old man, walked down the path and said, "Do you know what your country did today? They just declared war on Iraq." And, you know, that maybe in a very humiliating way was kind of an example of how little we North Americans as citizens of the U.S. really how little we know about other parts of the world, but that at the same time realizing that as volunteers, you are the face of America, of the U.S., and that in many ways you're left to do explaining for issues and situations that come up that are completely beyond your control. So as Joseph says, in terms of diplomacy, volunteers are definitely doing a lot of the grunt work in that respect.
Orin.
In 1999, when we went back after many years of not, you know, being on staff with Peace Corps and went back on staff with Peace Corps, we had lunch the week before we left, a small group of people had gone through the orientation for this. And we had lunch with the current director of Peace Corps at the time, Mark Guerin. And I remember we were sitting at the table and he looked at me. I was an older guy, obviously, who a lot of younger people sitting around me. And he said, "So why, after doing all these other things you've done over the years, have you decided to go back and work in Peace Corps? Why not another aid agency? Why not something else?" And I said, in all honesty to him, I said, "Let's see. I love working with other cultures and I love working internationally. And I actually think it's the place where I can do the least damage." And he looked at me and he said, "What do you mean by that?" And it was good humor. And I said, "Because here's what I feel, that we as a country with international development make so many mistakes. We have made more mistakes than we've had successes, I believe, in terms of international development. And those of us who have lived in other countries, you will see it time and time again of the disasters we have created. Peace Corps has the advantage of helping numerous individuals learn to live and work with people at a very basic level where they are building communication and understanding between people. And if I happen to really screw up, I'm going to leave a fairly small hole in the puddle when I leave. And I think there's merit in that."
And Dave?
Well, I think that America's image in the world is at a, as far as I can imagine, an all-time low. It just could hardly be worse. And I wish that the Peace Corps, I mean, my hope for the Peace Corps is that it's able to expand into some Muslim countries, more Muslim countries. I really think we need to get young and old, get Americans abroad, learning about other cultures, learning about other religions, learning other languages, and creating a much more positive image of our country abroad. The Peace Corps has, I think the original legislation of the Peace Corps enunciated three different goals, and Joseph could speak to this because he's a recruiter and I'm sure is better up on it than I. But the first is that it's aimed at getting Americans abroad and providing work that is helpful to a host country, to another country. The second, as I remember, is that the presence of Peace Corps volunteers abroad is a way of giving people in foreign countries exposure to Americans and how we act and live. And the third is that the presence of, or the having lived in a foreign country, young Americans or Americans, not so young anymore, come back to this country with a much better understanding of other people in the world. So I think the Peace Corps, those are still the goals of the Peace Corps, and I think my own experiences even quite recently are that the Peace Corps meets those very well. And I think almost any volunteer that you'll talk to will say that what they get personally out of the Peace Corps is much greater than they were able to what they gave anybody else while they were there. And I certainly believe that myself. But I also think that the Peace Corps does provide a useful service and does provide real significant help to people in foreign countries.
Well, when you were all in the field, did you feel that your were you believing that your efforts really mattered at the time when you were in the field? Were you able to see a big picture? Or did it take returning from the Peace Corps to appreciate your successes? Arn?
Yeah, following on, I think, also on Dave's comments, first of all, I think it's a big issue, and especially a big issue for new volunteers. I think during the first year of a volunteer service, many, many volunteers go through a real self-questioning period of saying, what am I really doing here? Especially volunteers, I think, sometimes who before they came in saw themselves as maybe international development professionals. That was a career they wanted to pursue. They wanted to get into public health. They wanted to get into politics, but international development. And they end up there oftentimes just saying, what am I really doing? It's not clear. I don't think I'm going to have any effect. I can't see where it's going. So I think for many of us, we to be successful, and when I say be successful, I mean to live successfully in your community, communicate effectively with people, and then to feel sort of satisfied with your position, you really have to personalize it. And you have to get down to your relationships with individuals in the community, people that you are working with on a day-by-day basis, and turn it into a small picture. And then in my own mind, when you take that small picture and multiply it by the whatever it is, number of volunteers that you now have had serve in all these years, which is, you know, something over 100,000. I don't know the figure these days. But then I think you begin to say, yeah, it's having an effect. But I do believe, and I think as Dave had said earlier, I do believe that the sort of effect becomes very much one of recognizing that in some instances you actually leave with something that is concrete, a student who has been inspired, a building that was put up, something that was improved, and you can see that. But in more cases, the fact that people there now understand that in this case Americans are maybe not what they thought they were, that the American looks at it and says, you know, I think I've helped them to understand that who we are, and then return to the U.S. and begin to have some impact in your local, you know, in your local area and on the attitudes and views of people back here.
How about a couple of stories about the impact that your work had on the people that you lived and worked with and the community? Lauren?
Yeah, actually, I just finished in June 2005 of my service, and in December I returned. And at the time when I was in my community in Panama, we had submitted a proposal and received funding to build a local community center, a municipal office. And so in December, we had inaugurated it in June, right before I had my close of service. So when I returned in December, obviously I went back and saw the building. Everything was great. And I was asking somebody about that day, and they were telling me about how well everything went, and then stopped and asked and said, Lorena, were you there that day? Had you already left? And I guess the funny thing was that I actually, you know, got up and spoke at the inauguration, helped cut the ribbon, and the ironic but wonderful part about that was that they didn't really remember if I was there, which meant that it was something so important to them and that they felt so much of a part of that it wasn't something that someone came in and implanted and then left, that it was actually integral in the community's development process. And that was one of the most wonderful feelings, that it wasn't what I was doing, it was what people were motivated to do for themselves. Dave.
Yeah, I was speaking about impact, what impact we had. If I may speak to my more recent Peace Corps experience, I went back to Thailand last year with a portion of the Peace Corps called the Crisis Corps, which is designed for former Peace Corps volunteers in times of crisis to go back and help the countries where they had served. And so I went back with several others to Thailand. following the tsunami, and the western coast of Thailand lost a lot of people, and it wasn't as badly hit as Sri Lanka or as Indonesia, but it still there were thousands of people who were killed. And so we were assigned to a refugee camp in a little village that had lost perhaps half. Several thousand people were killed in the village by the waves. And we were originally supposed to be doing building houses. And I've had some construction experience, and so it seemed a natural. But when we got there, this was 3 months after the tsunami had occurred, it turned out that there were tons of other groups who were doing exactly that. In fact, the Thai military was there. They were like our Army Corps of Engineers or something equivalent to it. And they had all sorts of equipment. They had 3,000 soldiers pumping up these houses for villagers. And we really didn't have a job. And so I, living in this camp with 100 families who'd lost their houses and lost many members of their families, I started going around the camp with a young Thai woman who was working on her master's degree in psychology. And because I spoke Thai, I would chat with people and just interview them with her. And one of the things I began to notice sitting in the rooms with these families, these were people jammed in little tiny rooms, 13 feet by 18 feet. All their possessions, what possessions they had, were on the floor. The walls were terribly flimsy. There was no place to hang anything. And I began to realize that while there were government agencies providing food and shelter, they'd sort of left these people in their rooms, and they were terribly depressed. The rains, the monsoons came soon after we arrived. Everything was getting soaked. And I realized that for a very small amount of money and with a little bit of effort, our group could put together shelves and clothes hangers and simple things to help people store their belongings off the floor, off the damp floors. And so we got a little money together and started a little manufacturing process. And we built shelves. We put in every room in the camp a long 8-foot shelf with a clothes rod underneath it. And we built cabinets and bookshelves and shelves. And it really was marvelous. These were people were in really terrible shape, and I honestly had the sense that we were doing something that in a small way made their day-to-day lives a lot better. I felt very happy about it.
How have you incorporated your Peace Corps experience into your life? How has it become a part of your life now? And also when I ask that also means how it has become part of your spirit as well. Lauren?
Yeah, I think that coming back, there was a reverse culture shock, which probably everybody else can relate to. And I noticed that I felt like I enjoyed having some of that anonymity again, because living in a small rural community, many times you feel like your life is in a fishbowl. So while it was good to have that kind of anonymity, at the same time, it was really scary looking at how people don't really see one another the way that they do in many other parts of the world. And so I think one of the things that has been important for me is to not forget that, to not allow myself to completely retransform and to always see people and be very, I guess, just try to be the old me that was in Panama and continue that, because it's so easy to get sucked into this kind of passive-aggressive attitude that affects many of us just as being as products of this society. And I think just really learning to take things in stride and being very upfront and very, intimate, socially intimate with other people has been one really good thing I've taken back here with me.
All right.
I think there is a side that is sort of, and maybe takes off from what Lauren is saying, that I think in some ways it can be a little bit alienating for people coming back, because I think because you are having such an intense experience and you do feel, I think it's real, that you develop a different view of the world than most of your neighbors and people you know once you get back to the U.S. And it is a perspective you cannot get rid of. You will always carry that perspective. So, for example, if you are sitting here – and you hear of something happening in a town that you lived in 10 years ago, you can no longer view that town as simply, oh, it's too bad those things happened, tsunamis, bombs, whatever it happens to be. You know those people. You know what it is like. And that experience and that perspective can have a tendency to alienate you from people who never had the opportunity to do that.
Joseph, how's the recruiting business these days? You are the recruiter for the Peace Corps on the University of New Mexico campus. And how does someone get a sense of whether they'll be a good Peace Corps volunteer?
Well, to answer your first question, recruitment is going very well here at UNM. And I think around the country, my year of recruitment started in the end of September. And since then, now we're in the beginning of March, I've worked with about 17 people so far. And my goal for the year is 30. So I'm actually beyond half at this point. In terms of finding out about Peace Corps, go to the website, peacecorps.gov, or the 1-800 number, 1-800-424-8580, to contact their local recruiter. There are offices throughout the country, every major city that have recruiters, as well as major universities have programs like the one I'm a part of, where one can be a recruiter and get their tuition and stipend paid for because you were a former Peace Corps volunteer.
Is it a hard sell these days for young people?
I don't think it is because, unfortunately, we live in a very, how do I say it, unpredictable world. And what's interesting now is that there are movements around the country that are trying – anti-war movements that are being confronted with a situation that people with socioeconomic backgrounds unsimilar to their own are saying, what other option is there? So Peace Corps is slowly being promoted as an option to military service.
So the Peace Corps seems to be a young person's opportunity. Is it appropriate thing for people of middle and past middle years? I see some heads going, yes, yes, yes.
Absolutely.
Jan.
I mean, you know, they have a lifetime of experience, and in every program that we've worked in, there have been older volunteers that have just been wonderful.
I understand, too, that a lot of people these days are sort of, after they've have gotten through college or maybe in a couple of years of grad school or have had their first job, or looking around and saying, is this really all? I mean, is this where I want to be? It's a great opportunity to shift gears and learn about a whole new area of the world and about new things about yourself. And so I think it's a great thing for people of any age.
Arn.
I had a woman in a staging, one of the orientations before they took off. I think it was one of the Latin American countries. I can't remember which one, years ago. And the staging was held in Miami, Florida, and we were in a hotel, and she was sitting at the back of the room. And I was saying what I thought was very important, you know, and expected everybody to be listening to me. But we're also always are very alert for people who have a lot of anxiety or feeling not so well or something. And she kept nodding off. She was, I would guess, in her 50s. And she kept nodding off, and I didn't take it too personally, really. But at the end, as we broke up, I just went back, and she said, I hope you don't take this personally. She said, but, you know, this is the fifth time I've been through this. And I said, really? And she said, yeah. She said, my kids are raised. They think I'm crazy. She said, I will be a Peace Corps volunteer until I can no longer walk. And she says, it's a terrific way for me to meet other people. I have the most interesting jobs in the world. I meet the most interesting people. I get to travel to places I would never go. And I have a terrific health policy. So she said, why would I not do this? And to me, that's like sort of capsulizes it for me in terms of, it's a great thing to do even as an older person.
How about if you throw out some words that would distinguish for us some of the characteristics of a Peace Corps volunteer?
Well, I'd say flexible and resourceful.
Open-minded.
Sensitive.
Audacious.
Eager.
Constantly learning.
Yeah, that's so great. I want to thank all of you, Lauren Kohler, Joseph Garcia, Arn Vanderberg, and Jan Vanderberg, and Dave Davenport. Thanks for being with us on Peace Talks today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
In a moment, we'll be talking with a current Peace Corps volunteer serving in Namibia, Africa, and Peace Corps Director Gaddy Vasquez. This is Peace Talks, a series on peacemaking and nonviolent conflict resolution. We'll be back in a moment.
Recent public service announcement promoting the Peace Corps.
How far would you go to help someone? Would you go to the end of your driveway? Would you cross a street? Would you cross an ocean? To a place 6,000 miles from home? How long would you go? Would you go for a week? A month? A year? Would you go for 2 years? Would you go if you could use your knowledge to teach someone? And in the process, maybe learn something yourself. Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps.
This is Peace Talks, the radio series on peacemaking and nonviolent conflict resolution. You can visit us online at peacetalksradio.com. Today we're marking the 45th anniversary of the Peace Corps by talking with returned Peace Corps volunteers and later with Peace Corps Director Gaddy Vasquez. Right now we want to get on the line to Walvis Bay, Namibia, on the southwest coast of Africa, to talk with Anna Skinner, a 26-year-old volunteer from Dearborn, Michigan, who is currently doing her Peace Corps service there. Hi, Anna.
Hi, Carol.
Anna is assigned to an HIV/AIDS awareness program at a multipurpose center. Like many communities in Africa, this community is struggling with AIDS. Almost 30% of the population is HIV positive. Anna, what kind of things are you personally involved with to help this community deal with AIDS?
Well, I'm something of the multipurpose volunteer at the multipurpose center. But most of what I do is in some way related to outreach education activities. So I don't actually do that many presentations myself in the community, but I do a lot of the capacity building with the staff at the multipurpose center, planning, organizing, and continuing to build our skills in the HIV area.
So does it feel thus far that you're having an impact?
I find that a very difficult question to answer, especially in the HIV/AIDS field. I sometimes go out and assist with these presentations at workplaces or even at bars, in these informal bars in the community, and standing there with my colleagues, and we're talking about all of these facts. And what it all comes down to, though, is not about so much about the knowledge, but about the behavior that comes after hearing all of the information we have shared. So, you know, I will never know what happens after those people leave that conference room or that bar that night.
Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned something about the bars. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure. One of the most successful programs at the Multipurpose Center is the Shabeen Session program. So a Shabeen is an informal bar. it's essentially, you know, a structure that could be built out of spare pieces of corrugated tin or, you know, an old Coca-Cola sign on for a door. Although I shouldn't say that. Some are often these very nice structures. But they're all over the community. I think in this small community of 50,000 people, there are almost 600 shebeens. There are anywhere from 2 to 4 outreach health educators that go to these shebeens. They previously make an arrangement with the owner, and they do a presentation that lasts somewhere around 2 hours, where they talk with the people there about HIV transmission, prevention. But we find at these sessions that people are very interested in listening and coming and putting down their beer for those 2 hours to listen to what they have to say. I've been amazed every time at how a small group of maybe 10 people turns into, you know, 25 by the end of the presentation.
Do you have any stories that make you feel good about what you're doing?
Sure. It's a hard question because I think it's the little things that build up into one large thing that makes me feel good about being here. I think a lot about my bike ride into work every day. I have a 15-minute bike ride, and I usually go down the same path. And so now I have kind of become known to the people who also cross my path as the American girl on the bike. And there is a kindergarten along the way, and depending on my timing, I will sometimes catch a large group of maybe 20 small kids outside that are waving and screaming, "Anna, Anna, hi, good morning." And I think that clearly that isn't connected to my work with HIV, but I think it's those small moments that make me feel good about being here and like I'm a part of where I am, and therefore that also when I am doing work that's related to HIV, whether it's in my office or it's out in the community, that maybe there are the few people that are, you know, listening and are considering what I have to say, and that I have some form of legitimacy here.
In talking today to our panel of returned Peace Corps volunteers, many of them affirm that as well, that it seems to be much about the personal connection, both for the volunteer and for the people in the community where you're living. They also said that it was a challenge for them to transition to a new culture. And I was wondering how that experience has been for you. You know, especially these days, it's said that Americans abroad are not as welcome as they once were and that safety is a concern.
The transition was interesting for me. My site, Walvis Bay, is a really rather large and developed town where I have a lot of conveniences and a similar lifestyle in many ways to that which I had in the United States. So in some ways, I feel like I didn't have a lot that I personally needed to adjust to, but I think that served as an illusion sometimes because there were, even though it looked and felt at times like things were something akin to what I knew on the other side of the ocean, that then, you know, my actual work in getting to know the people and culture and the way things actually operate kind of, you know, threw me because I was like, wait, I thought that this was like home, but it really isn't like home at all. So, I mean, my favorite example of this is the word now. So here, when someone says now, they never mean now. and someone would say, you know, well, I'm doing this now, which was supposed to mean they would be doing it. To me, I thought it meant they were doing it in the next 5 minutes, but really it meant they would be doing it in maybe the next 2 hours. So it was, you know, just little things like that. In terms of my safety and how I've been perceived here as an American, I felt very welcomed, and I felt nothing but curiosity and inquisitive perspective from people who are meeting me. I off the top of my head, I can think of two negative comments or experiences that I've had, but otherwise people have really welcomed me and wanted to ask me questions.
Are there typical questions that are asked of you? What do they want to know?
There are, and I always find them funny. A big one is, well, don't I know Britney Spears? Or don't I know Eminem? And so, you know, everyone is waiting to hear about Jennifer Lopez, like she's my next-door neighbor and best friend. So, that's the obvious one. And sometimes I get the question of, well, you know, I thought things were so wonderful in America. Why would you come here? Why would you leave that? I don't understand. But I also, you know, do on occasion get the questions of, well, who were the first people to be in America? But most of them are actually about pop culture and, you know, when am I going to give them Dr. Phil's phone number?
How did you come to join the Peace Corps and be a volunteer? How did that idea come to you?
Well, I had just graduated from university, and when, you know, everyone was beginning to ask me that question a few months before I graduated, well, you know, what are you going to do next? And I really didn't know what the answer to that question was. I had majored in sociology, and I knew that I wanted to go into public service in some capacity. And I had really been drawn to this idea of living abroad. So I kept going back to the idea of the Peace Corps. I had a good friend who was 2 years older than me who had been a volunteer in Honduras and really had a wonderful experience. But the 2 years really was daunting to me at the time. And, you know, did I really want to make that sort of commitment? And, you know, was I really cut out for this sort of work? And, you know, all of those sorts of questions. But finally, I decided it was really the perfect recipe for me.
So, Anna, are you able to tell yet if this experience is changing you in any way?
Absolutely. You know, there are times when I think, geez, you know, I think they're my most frustrating times when I say, God, you know, why am I still thinking or acting or feeling this way? Haven't I been here for a year now and have learned, you know, haven't I moved on? But those are the bad days, I guess I'd say. And for certain, I feel that my level of patience is unlike anything that I ever knew before. I didn't know I had the capacity to be so patient. It's something that I cannot articulate, I guess I would say, but I think that I now see people in general in a different way. I think I now see the human condition in a different way. I think that I will see development work and social justice in a different way for the rest of my life as well.
Thanks so much, Anna, for talking to us.
Thank you, Carol.
Anna Skinner is a Peace Corps volunteer currently working in Walvis Bay, Namibia, in Southwest Africa, helping one community deal with the AIDS epidemic there.
The energy, the faith, the devotion which we bring to this endeavor will light our country and all who serve it. And the glow from that fire can truly light the world.
An excerpt from John F. Kennedy's 1961 inaugural address.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. My fellow citizens of the world, ask not what America will do for you, but what together we can do for the freedom of man.
Gaddy Vasquez was nominated by President George Bush and sworn in as a director of Peace Corps on February 15, 2002. He's the agency's first Hispanic American director. Director Vasquez joins us from his office at Peace Corps headquarters in Washington, D.C. Welcome to Peace Talks.
Thank you very much. It's good to be with you.
When you're asked to speak about the Peace Corps, you often quote John F. Kennedy's words that laid out a vision for the agency when he was running for president and then again as president. Can you give us a sense of how palpable Kennedy's call to action is, even all these years later within the Peace Corps?
Well, the words of President Kennedy are still frequently cited as the reason that people apply to serve in the Peace Corps, particularly older Americans who were around in 1961 when he articulated the vision of Peace Corps. There are some who today are serving and have come into the Peace Corps as a direct result of that message in 1961. And Americans have been responding to that message since 1961 at numbers that I think have surprised many people.
As the generation who wasn't around for Kennedy's call grows up, I would guess many have heard of the Peace Corps, but if you ask them how they think the Peace Corps really nurtures peace, I'm not sure they'd know. If you had a minute to tell them, how would you explain that Peace Corps volunteers substantially promote peace around the world?
Well, one of the very key elements that's so important to our world today is the fact that there are many countries that lack the kind of familiarity or understanding about Americans that we would all hope for. And by that I mean that there are still many myths and elements of ignorance that relate to understanding who we are and the composition of American society. I travel to countries and have for the last 4 years as director, and I still get comments from people who stare and look at me and comment that I don't look like an American, which immediately causes me to react, and I'm reminded that there are still many places in the world where people have a visual of what an American is supposed to look like. So it's as basic and as simple as that, that there are stereotypes of what we're supposed to look like, and people in some parts of the world do not understand or do not have knowledge of the fact that America is a place of great diversity, where people have come from different parts of the world to be part of this great society. And the second component of all that is that Americans with talents and skills and educational background are going to some of the most rural places in the world to reach out to men and women, to assist them in development of sustainable projects, and in turn create a future for them that might lend itself to giving them a little more in the way of economic income and opportunity, but also sustainability of life and a quality of life that they probably would have never had or might not have had it not been for an American Peace Corps volunteer. And by virtue of those activities, by virtue of putting a face on America, we begin to promote that cross-cultural understanding that then builds into peace and understanding.
U.S. foreign policy decisions in recent years have not been globally supported. One of the returned Peace Corps volunteers we talked with said she had to deal with comments in her assigned country like, "Do you know what your country did today?" Is animosity toward the U.S. an issue in today's Peace Corps?
We don't have a sense that it is. Certainly there are misunderstandings about who we are as Americans, but the strength of the Peace Corps has been that over 45 years, notwithstanding events and trends and occurrences throughout the world, over 45 years, the Peace Corps has maintained its consistency. It's maintained its work in countries throughout the world, and it has done so very effectively. And the reason for that is that the Peace Corps, in its inception, was identified as an agency that would not be involved in foreign policy or be an extension of foreign policy. And so consequently, volunteers go to countries to train men and women in host countries. That is their work. That is their purpose. Now, from time to time, I have no doubt that volunteers will have inevitably a conversation that will be raised by a community or a resident of their village or town, curious and wondering. But the fact is that volunteers are there to train men and women, and we have done so successfully for 45 years.
We're talking with Gaddy Vasquez, the director of the Peace Corps. Has there been any change in the numbers of people signing up for the Peace Corps since the September 11th attacks in 2001?
In 2004, we achieved a 29-year high in the number of volunteers, and in 2005, we achieved a 30-year high in the number of volunteers.
What do you think is driving that interest?
My sense, and this is anecdotal information based on discussions with thousands of volunteers as I travel, and many of them recount to me a sense of responsibility, a sense of feeling like they need and want to contribute something to better understanding, to promoting the ideal of peace, and also to getting to understand the world a little better. I mean, the world is changing. Globalization, the internet, communication, and the speed with which we can communicate over the water and around the world has changed everything, and so consequently the world has gotten smaller, and I think Americans generally are people who are giving. Volunteerism is one of the core values of our society, but the opportunity to go overseas and train men and women in host countries where in many places they live on less than a dollar a day is a unique opportunity where Americans can make an instant and dramatic impact on the lives of others, and I think that's a very significant motivator for many Americans who decide to serve in the Peace Corps.
You quote a former U.S. ambassador to the Philippines as saying there is no U.S. program that yields a greater return for the taxpayer's dollar than the Peace Corps. Do you believe that's true?
Absolutely. I don't know of any other organization that could provide 7,800 plus volunteers to 76 countries for a budget that's just a bit above $300 million a year. And I think the reason we can do that is because these Americans are volunteers who work for a monthly allowance for housing and some other benefits that they receive. But the fact of the matter is that it is absolutely one of the greatest returns on the taxpayer dollar.
Now, the Peace Corps' annual budget for fiscal year 2005 was $317 million, which is about 1% of the foreign operations budget. And you've said you want more funding from Congress. If it is such an effective yield for the taxpayers' dollar and given a $400 billion military budget, why is it so hard to get more money for the Peace Corps?
Well, Congress has increased our budget over the last 4 years running, and we are seeing an increase in our budget and have seen an increase in our budget and a continued interest by Congress to increase our budget. And so while it has not been at the levels that we requested, we recognize that Congress has to weigh many, many priorities. But we believe that that Congress is recognizing the value and the worth of the Peace Corps, and that's evidenced by the fact that the last 4 years in a row the Congress has increased our funding.
How active is the Peace Corps in the Muslim world?
Right now, about 20% of all of the volunteers who serve in the Peace Corps are serving in the Muslim world, and we are having great success in some countries. We have done so now for 20, 30, and 40 years, and so this has been a very positive relationship with countries throughout the world, and we continue to see an expansion in those areas.
Outside of volunteering, what can Americans who believe in the Peace Corps mission do to help?
Most importantly, I think what every American can do is to steer young Americans, and not just young Americans exclusively, but Americans in general, who have an inclination or predisposition to do international work and to go overseas, to encourage them to look toward the Peace Corps as an organization, an agency that for 45 years has been sending Americans overseas to the tune of 185,000, and now in 138 countries of service in 45 years, that has a stellar record of service, has made a lasting and powerful impact not only on host countries but throughout the world. And if there are Americans who have an inclination to really embark on what's been called the toughest job you'll ever love, then visiting the Peace Corps website at peacecorps.gov is a place to start, and there we can begin to acquaint an individual with the possibilities of service.
Well, I thank you so much, Gaddy Vasquez, Director of the Peace Corps.
My pleasure. Thank you.
To hear this program again or to hear extended interviews with our guests, visit our website, peacetalksradio.com. That's peacetalksradio.com, where you can hear all the programs in our series on peacemaking and nonviolent solutions to conflict. Peace Talks is a production of Good Radio Shows Incorporated, a nonprofit media organization that depends on contributions from listeners like you to produce programs like the one you just heard. You can contribute online and get more information at goodradioshows.org. That's goodradioshows.org. Other support for the program comes from the McCune Charitable Foundation of New Mexico, the Peace Tales CD Project, and KUNM. We also had help this time from Karen Chaput at Peace Corps headquarters. Music from Peace Corps videos and Allie Adelman. I'm Paul Ingalls. Thanks for listening.